Today's show brought to you by our latest sponsor. Very happy to be working with our friends at Free Rain Coffee. This stuff is delicious. Been really enjoying the fresh ground coffee. They've been in business for years and years, and they make really delicious stuff. We have a terrific promo code going on right now with our friends at Free Rain. You can use the code MONEY20 for 20% off. We're talking about beans, grounds, pods, slow roasted coffee, unbeatably smooth, really terrific. And I love their phrase. It just makes me think of horse players, full of flavor to fuel folks to get up and get after it. That's what we want you to do here. Go to the website, Free Rain Coffee Company, and use that promo code MONEY20. Great stuff, and thank you to our new partners at Free Rain Coffee Company. Their website is freeraincoffee.com. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players Podcast. This is our show for Tuesday, March 26th. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, coming to you once again from England, Bermondsey, specifically looking out at street level on what's an actually halfway decent day by English standards, in that it is not pouring down rain. So we will take it, heading back to the U.S. on Thursday and getting ready for Keeneland, which is coming right up. Very much looking forward to that. Going to be doing and the next video in our perfect trip series, actually, for Keeneland, one that I feel like we've sort of previewed some of the places we visited before and some of the videos we've done for Breeders' Cup when we were out that way. But anyway, going to be a ton of fun. Really looking forward to being at Keeneland for opening weekend, one of the true harbingers of spring. So as I look forward to getting back to the USA, we bring in a man who's already there and who's spent more time near the Brooklyn Bunker than I have recently, as he was down there watching some of the NCAA tournament over the weekend. He's now back ensconced in Saratoga and apparently covered in snow. He's Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, JK?
Yeah, it was raining. It's been raining down there, snowing up here. It's like, I think they got like 20 inches of snow. Luckily, we were, like you said, we were downstate, so we dodged a lot of it. But Rigatoni's had to deal with it, trying to go out to the backyard to take care of some business. When he it's pretty funny on his little paws, he falls right into the deep snow and seems very confused, as if like a human were walking on an icy pond, scared to fall in. That's how he does it.
Oh boy, yeah. Not all dogs like the snow. Having Muggsy the handicapping Labrador, the snow just filled her with energy. But I know many of them, it's not the case. But I'm sure Rigatoni's been managing up there. How did you manage down in Brooklyn? Did you get the basketball results you were looking for?
Yeah. It was fun. You know, obviously we're there watching Duke play, and they won both of their games, beat Vermont and James Madison. I will say this though, while we're here, I've never understood fan guy go to game torment people as your main mode of existence. It's very bizarre to me. I've just never done that. Like, I just, you know, I go and I like cheer from, I'm not even really much of a cheerer just because I think of my sports background, but I still do root a little bit. I'll do a heavy-handed clap, as it were, but I'm never like attacking the other team. There was this guy that looked a little bit like Jeffrey Dahmer, a little bit as if he's played with some explosives up in the woods of Vermont, like carrying on about yelling bench press at like the strongest player on Duke's basketball team and your form sucks, knowing he's never picked up anything round outside of probably some beads he's tried to put in some sort of a jacket vest with explosives in it. It's just very weird to do that. I don't understand these people. They're very odd folks.
I've never gotten really the defining your fandom by the hatred of the other team or the key rival. It's as a Mets fan, you see a lot of this. There are Mets fans who sort of define themselves in their hatred of the Yankees. Certainly as an Islander fan, Islander fans who define themselves in the hatred of the Rangers. You see this a lot in England. I was talking recently to a Tottenham fan who, I forget the specifics, but at some point they were playing like an important match in Europe, or maybe it was the other way around. Maybe it was an Arsenal fan playing an important match, more likely, in Europe. And they're still like singing songs about how they hate Tottenham. And it's like, haven't you moved beyond that by now? I don't get it. It just makes you seem, to me, in all of these instances, it makes it seem like you have massive insecurities and a bit of a complex. Is that fair to say?
It's very weird, but don't worry. I got him back. I at the end of the game, I just continuously took selfies of myself, making sure he was the main focus of the selfie while being in the picture. So I've got some funny pictures of some middle fingers from a suspect. You know what? It's going to come in handy at some point when some tragedy happens. I'm going to have pictures of the person who likely was responsible for it.
That's very sick, but also kind of funny. Let's get to the recapping, my friend, because we're only going to be here briefly for this section of the show. We had major Kentucky Derby prep action last weekend in the form of the Louisiana Derby. Catching Freedom, as you predicted, as you prophesied on our YouTube channel. Remind people, we have a lot of YouTube-only content these days. If you want to get everything we're doing, make sure you go over there and help us out by dropping a comment, by subscribing, by clicking the notification bell, etc. But you said Catching Freedom would win. Catching Freedom did win, and I wasn't too bad either. I was very interested in Honor Marie as the play of the race from a value point of view, while also certainly respecting Catching Freedom. In the end, they went 1-2, 5-7 it came, with a $1 exacta paying 39. Not too bad. Nearly 8-1 on Honor Marie, 330-1 on Catching Freedom. Catching Freedom and Honor Marie both came from pretty far back in the pack in this one, with Track Phantom setting the pace once again, looking like a horse that didn't necessarily want to go the mile and 3/16. No surprise, really, based on how he looked in the prep race. The crowd did fall for him, though, making him the 2-1 favorite. Common Defense was the other pace horse, about 10-1, ended up back there in fifth. So how impressive was this effort from Catching Freedom and Honor Marie, JK? Was there a setup at play here, or were these just the best horses? It came back in a 97 buyer speed figure.
Yeah, I feel like it was just the best horses. I mean, I think when you talk about the impressiveness of the run, if you look at it as an individual event just on the day, yeah, I think it was pretty impressive. But I think at this time of the year, when we talk about was something impressive, I think we are looking at it in the lens of, is it impressive as it pertains to 20 horses getting in the starting gate on the first Saturday in May? That to me is a little bit less impressive in terms of you know, this horse isn't breaking particularly well, knocking himself way out of the back of the field. Yes, did pass the test of the mile and 3/16, which you feel like is a foregone conclusion. That extra 16th of a mile isn't going to be the reason that Catching Freedom gets beat in the Kentucky Derby. But I do think that the style is a concern for me, and it will always be a concern for me. You need something extraordinary to happen for this style to often win the Kentucky Derby when they're not the absolute best horse in the gate, right? Street Sense came from way out of it to win, but he was the best horse in the gate regardless of his style. A horse like Orb came from out of it, best horse, but also got a great setup that day as well. And so that's my concern, I think, for Catching Freedom as it pertains to the Derby, is that the style breaking a little bit slowly, having a lot to do, you leave a lot of the control of your destiny in the hands of others. And I think that is a bit concerning.
Worth mentioning too, there are more recent examples of deep closers getting the job done with asterisks, maybe at least on one of them. But it is interesting to me that the examples you noted were also from the pre-points era. I believe those were both pre-points era races where you had the stretch out speed, and you know, the paces of the Derby used to be faster than they've been in the more recent runnings. It's just something that could work against horses like Catching Freedom and Honor Marie. Catching Freedom for me, yeah, he's always been a little bit workmanlike. Now, maybe this is a year, and we'll see what happens with this coming Saturday and Fierceness making his return to the races. But we haven't seen much in the way of brilliance, I think is the word I'm looking for, from this generation of thoroughbred. So maybe a workmanlike runner, should he get a setup, has every chance going there. But not a horse like you, not a horse I would be you know, circling and saying, ooh, I'm going to be keying on him, but certainly a horse that deserves his place in the top 10 that Eric DaCosta, the new top 10, Eric DaCosta will be posting it soon, and we'll be doing a whole video on that. Do you agree with that sort of general idea of where this horse stands?
Yeah, no, I mean, it definitely deserves to be in the mix, right? I mean, I feel pretty good. You know, I'm a big believer in, which is one of the reasons we've always kind of avoided the top 10 thing, is because I'm a believer in that the real answers of who are the Derby contenders start now. They start last weekend with the Louisiana Derby. Then they start this weekend upcoming with the Florida Derby. And then subsequently with the Bluegrass, the Wood Memorial, and the Santa Anita Derby. To me, that's where all the answers are really, really, really found when you go that mile and an eighth. So while we have a list and I think it looks good where it is, the real defining answers, I think, are in the weeks coming.
I didn't prep you for this one, but I'm going to just throw it out there because, hey, it's a important prep for the Kentucky Oaks, the Fairgrounds Oaks, that also happened on Saturday with Tarifa getting the job done. 95 buyer speed figure. This is a faster number heading into the Oaks than we've seen from a lot of the recent years worth of three-year-old fillies. And I would say, whereas I'm a little bit, throwing up my hands, will the Louisiana Derby be a key piece of form for the Derby? I am feeling pretty good about the idea that the Fairgrounds Oaks is going to be an important piece of form for the Kentucky Oaks. Any thoughts on Tarifa and the Oaks or anything else on the Louisiana Derby before we move it on down the line?
No, I mean, look, I thought she ran well. She's got three back-to-back wins going around two turns. She's and the thing about the Oaks I always have to remember is that it is a mile and an eighth, and I think outside of the race that they run in New York, which is the Coaching not the Club. Demoiselle, but the no, what's the I can't why am I going blank? I'll remember before it's over. The New York prep race for the Oaks. They're not none of them are running a mile and an eighth. And so a lot of the times there's still that question about the mile and an eighth. But when a horse can win three times mile and a 16th, you're pretty certain that the distance isn't going to be an issue.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes that difference between a mile and a 16th and a mile and an eighth can play a lot more, like a lot more than a 16th of a mile. But, I mean, when you've got that proven form and just the way she shapes, you wouldn't – not saying she has to win the race, but you wouldn't think the distance would be the reason if she didn't. Let's touch briefly on a horse from the Derby Trail, who will not be competing in the Derby, apparently, might be competing on the undercard in the American Oaks. Endlessly wins the Jeff Ruby Stakes with a buyer figure of 91 for connections, that we always like to shout out here on the In the Money Media Network, and Michael McCarthy getting the job done, calling the shots for this Son of Oscar performance. Wins by four, dispatched this field pretty easily in the end. You think they're making the right decision by sticking to the turf with Endlessly and not getting the bad case of Derby fever? The figure came back at 91.
There's a handful of trainers in this world that if they make a decision like this, they get my automatic trust. Michael McCarthy is one of them. He loves to show up for the big days and run in the big races. But if he feels like this is Endlessly's path, it's a path that doesn't have the same, it wasn't lower tier like it used to be in the past, right? There's so much money in these big turf races throughout the year, especially for three-year-olds, that if you have a horse that you feel like is going to excel in this situation, why throw them into a 20-horse dirt race field that could really mess them up mentally, right? Especially if the horse isn't handling it well. And then get beat. You waste a race. You could potentially risk an injury with a turf horse running on the dirt that in a race like that with 20 horses. Just do what you think is best for the horse. And if that's what Michael McCarthy decides to do, he's got my seal of approval. Not that he was looking for it.
Your opinion matters to Michael. I know that personally, JK. Let's talk about very quick early look at the Florida Derby. This race is going to be covered on multiple other shows later in the week. We're going to be trying to set up a live stream. I haven't had talent confirmed, but like the idea of maybe reconvening that panel I had earlier with Nick Tamaro and Brian Natto. If I can find a time where we can do it, we'll go over all the stakes on this card. This will also almost definitely be part of the special Coast to Coast show we're doing. They're seeding the Coast to Coast bet this week. That's something that folks are going to want to pay attention to with the money added to the pot on that one. But so let's talk about this race from your first look at a vertical slash horizontal betting strategy standpoint, JK. We'll talk about this also over on the YouTube channel. But if you were playing a bet like one of the big picks on the Florida Derby day, or you were playing the Coast to Coast, how many runners do you think you would be needing in the Florida Derby?
Well, I mean, we talk about it at Saratoga all the time in different ways, to Todd, to not to Todd, to Chad, to not to Chad. This is definitely a fierceness or not to fierceness. You have to make a decision on whether you believe or you don't believe. And I think that your betting strategy needs to be, it needs to be black and white. I think to be able to take it, unless depending on what you feel about the rest of the sequence, right? I mean, if you have some 48 one shot you love, then this obviously doesn't apply. But if you're playing the race is pretty straightforward the rest of the way, I think you have to make a decision. My decision is going to be two fierceness. What we saw on debut with fierceness, what we saw in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile, considering that group with Muth and Timberlake and Locked, I believe that was a real race. And I believe that, you know, that when you have a horse like this, a two-year-old champion who has shown you so much, the idea to have to tighten every screw to the umpteenth degree before the Holy Bull to make sure that everything's ready to go doesn't seem like something that Todd Pletcher would do. You have a two-year-old champion. You ease them up. You want their best race to be the Kentucky Derby, or even probably the Florida Derby, then the Kentucky Derby. Let's kind of ease them back in there. Let's get them back ready. And I think that he just probably wasn't ready for the Holy Bull. Seemed to be working extremely well since there. If you look at XBTV, you'll see a couple of works with Agate Road, who's turned out to be a nice one. You'll see a couple of works with Tuscan Sky, seems to be a nice one. BU, another horse that once upon a time was running 80, 90 buyers. So it just feels like fierceness is kind of back in the right direction. Now, he's going to be such a short price that I don't believe that he, like I said, you're either with him or you're not. I don't think that you're going to be upside down from an equity standpoint if you start using fierceness, you start using Conquest Warrior, you start throwing in maybe a little Seminole Chief to be cute. And oh, by the way, I think Hades could get loose. You're upside down here. I think you have to make a decision. My decision will be to go with fierceness.
I'll go the other way. I think Conquest Warrior, a horse who's had a lot of hype, you're definitely making a bet on the come with Conquest Warrior, as he hasn't really run fast enough to win a grade one. But what he has done is look really good, look better than the paper, in my opinion, in each of the three starts. The ease of the manner of victory over the course and distance last time, the troubled trip, and they're showing courage to get up two back. And this is a race that has a ton of speed. I don't think there's any shot that Hades will get loose personally. There's loads of other speed in this race in the form of, LaDom Bro, the Seminole Chief you mentioned, who I think could potentially maybe show some more speed this time around. I'm thinking there's going to be at least an honest, if not a fast pace. And what I really like about Conquest Warrior, I'm pretty sure he's the best closer, but he's not some plotter. This is a horse who has enough tactical speed to be in position. He hasn't done it yet. He has to prove it. But I think he might be worth making a bet on the come on at odds of 4-1, 5-1. And I think you'll get all of that with fierceness making the market for him and with some other horses who have to take money. You're going to hear a lot more about the Florida Derby. You're going to see a lot more from me and JK over on the YouTube channel. JK, any closing thoughts on this opening section of the show?
Yeah, well, look, you hinted at it, and we'll talk about it more this week, but this coast-to-coast being seeded, that's pretty cool. It's like a carryover, especially on a big day. Should be a big pool. Make sure you support those types of things, man. I want you to know this is what happens. I'm 100% certain of it. Marketing guys, horse player guys, ADW guys, they go to their financial person at the institution that they work for or with, and they say, hey, let's see this pool. It'll do this. People will start to play it. It'll happen. It'll go well. And when it falls flat on its face, when people don't support the wager, you're making that initiative look bad. You have to support these types of initiatives when they're trying to give back to the horse player, because this is the argument, right? We tell them all the time, lower takeout, we'll bet more. Lower takeout, we'll bet more. Lower takeout, we'll bet more. Well, this is a situation where it's a de facto way, another way for them to lower takeout. We have to support it so that they will continue to see that we will bet more if the opportunities are better.
It's a great point. And it's $100,000 too. It's no joke, the amount of money being added to this pool. And it's already a player-friendly wager. You know, sometimes on mandatory payout days, etc., it seems like a good deal, but there's some more sophisticated numbers that suggest that the computer players have such an advantage with low minimums and pools that they're, you know, have really sussed out and figured out that they still do disproportionately well, computers, you know, on a mandatory payout day. You know, still worth taking a shot. It's still an effective lower takeout, but it might not be the gold that appears. This, I think, is gold because you already have player-friendly terms with a low takeout, with that higher minimum, and now 100,000 added. Let's support this bet. Very well put, JK. And we will talk to you on the YouTube channel or a little bit later in the week.
We're thrilled to be partnered with Sam Houston Race Park and very excited to be promoting this new contest on Saturday, April 6th. $2,000 bankroll live money contest. You've got to be there to participate. No online version with the state of racing in Texas. There are daily feeders and weekly qualifiers available at horseturnies.com. In addition to your bankroll, one BCBC seat and two NHC seats are on the line, as well as tour points. Contest races are going to consist of all the Houston races, plus simulcast races run during Sam Houston from Aqueduct, Keeneland, Oaklawn, and Santa Anita. That means they're going to have the Wood in there, the Bluegrass, and the Santa Anita Derby. Be sure to get your entries now as they're limited to 100 in total. Remember, all the prizes are added in this contest. Your bankroll is your bankroll. You're not paying for any of this stuff. Great opportunity. Well worth the trip to Texas for this one. To sign up, go to inthemoneypodcast.com/SHRP.
Next up on the show, returning guest. We bring him in from time to time, usually to talk about everything going on in the world of tournaments at FirstBet/ExpressBet. He is Tyler Frausto. Tyler, what's going on today?
Pete, thanks for having me on. Nothing much, just getting ready for my trip to Florida this weekend for the Florida Derby. Kind of excited.
We're going to talk to you about the Florida Derby contest and then the Santa Anita Derby contest that comes on the heels of it. Tournament players, mark your calendars for these next two Saturdays. But before we go forward, I want to look back a little bit and ask you, I have to live vicariously with these English racing conflicts that have developed. I missed the NHC this year. How was your time out in Vegas? And I know you guys qualify a whole lot of people to the NHC. Who had the best success amongst your qualifiers?
I believe this year we qualified about 51 people, if I'm not mistaken. It was a good time. I mean, people there play in all of our tournaments regardless, so it was pretty good. Lawrence Calden actually got fourth place, I believe, in NHC. So that was a great success, who earned his way through us. So that was amazing.
Awesome. And you had a good time out there in Vegas, rubbing elbows with players, etc.?
Absolutely. Myself and Bailey from First Bet, we were out there kind of socializing, shaking hands, kissing babies with people all around the room.
I had the great pleasure of hanging out with Bailey Armour when she was over here in England back in February. We were both at the ICE conference, and I'd never hung out with her to that degree before. Definitely what I really like about her, you know, like you, is that there's some people in pockets there at your company. You do a great job for players because you're players yourselves. You know, it's great. You know, just how into the playing aspect you both are. And I'm convinced, you know, that's one of the reasons why Santa Anita has been a contest leader for as long as they have, with, you know, Nate Newby himself being somebody I'd put in that position as well. Somebody who's qualified for the NHC and just, you know, gets it from a player perspective. It's got to make it easier for you when you're making the rules, when you're, you know, running these things.
Absolutely. And you dropped the right name right there. Nate Newby is definitely the one that kicked off the tournament scene at Santa Anita Park. And ever since, I've been kind of following along and kind of learning myself. But if there's ever a question, he's the first person I reference to.
Excellent. Love to hear that. Let's start off with the specifics on this Florida Derby contest happening this Saturday. It sounds like the fact that you're going to Florida makes me think it's a hybrid. You can play on track or online. What's the buy-in? What kind of prizes are on offer?
The buy-in is $1,500, and yes, it is a hybrid. It is offered online. It's going to be offered at Santa Anita as well as a satellite site and Gulfstream. And we are offering NHC seats and seats to the Kentucky Derby Challenge along with cash. Now, that was our original offering last year, but last year we saw so much success in this tournament. We got 172 entries that we actually threw in a BCBC seat. Great. So that means that if we supersede 125 entries, there will be a BCBC seat given away alongside the NHC, the Kentucky Derby Challenge seats, and the cash.
Just so for people looking ahead and to help them know what they're playing for this weekend, what is your Kentucky Derby Challenge contest going to look like this year?
Kentucky Derby Challenge is going to replicate last year's. It's going to be a $3,000 buy-in contest. on Kentucky Derby itself. The day before, we usually have a Kentucky Oaks feeder into it. And forgive me, but I forget how much that is. I want to say it was about, it's either $300 or $600 buy-in. But yeah, definitely check on ExpressBet/tournaments. We have everything listed there. I don't think the Kentucky Derby is quite yet listed, but it will be in the next week or so. But yes, so it's a $3,000 contest on Kentucky Derby Day, and it ends on the Kentucky Derby itself. It's a great contest.
I like that idea. A lot of press on that. Very cool. And it's a cool idea for Just As Horses on Saturday, going to be punching their tickets for the Kentucky Derby. We could have players punching their tickets for the Kentucky Derby Challenge. In terms of the races involved in the contest for Florida Derby Day, I assume it is it – well, I shouldn't assume anything. What races are being part of the contest? Is it just Florida, or is there Santa Anita as well?
So it is only Florida racing, so all Gulfstream Park racing on Saturday. And we are also – sorry about that. Registration is open until race 7. So you can register up until race 7. You can buy an entry early, play the first few, and if you whiff, you can buy a second one by race 7 and still get in.
Love that idea. It allows you some interesting strategies, potentially playing early in the day in cash to maybe win your entry fee and then buy in, turn it into a little bit of a pre-roll in that sense. I love the fact that you don't have to commit, you know, days ahead of time. Gives you a chance to see scratches, to see the weather. I imagine you'll have a flurry of late entries as a result of that. But has participation been pretty strong so far? Are you feeling good about getting to that magic number that will add the BCBC seat to the pot?
Yes, especially after last year. We had great success, and we're definitely hoping to have the same this year. We also have all of our feeders running on ExpressBet. We have $40 feeders, which feed into the qualifier on Friday, which is a $300 qualifier. You could buy into that one straight away if you just want to try to qualify through that. And also we have feeders running on horse tourneys as well. So with all the feeders plus the amount of love that we got last year, I think we're looking to give away a BCBC seat this year as well.
ExpressBet.com/tournaments. That's the place to go. And also HorseTourneys.com. Thanks to everybody who participated in our Echo Town 8 contest last weekend on Horse Tourneys. And now there's more opportunities to win cool prizes there in the form of being able to qualify for the Florida Derby Challenge this weekend, or if for some reason you can't participate in that, hey, start looking ahead. One Saturday further, Santa Anita Derby contest happening. What can you tell us about that one, Tyler?
Santa Anita Derby and Florida Derby are quite the same in the way that they're formatted. It's going to be another $1,500 tournament, and the seats will be absolutely the same. We're going to be feeding into the Kentucky Derby and the NHC, along with BCBC if we get enough entries. We have the same feeders all running through the week. We also have the qualifier on Friday and also on horse tourneys as well. So, again, we're giving them as much opportunity, giving the players as much opportunity as possible to earn your way up and come participate.
Second verse, same as the first, it sounds like, in terms of the rules and regs, the T's and C's for Florida Derby, right, and Santa Anita Derby. Race-wise, is that one all Santa?
All Santa Anita, yep.
Great. And we went over the buy-in. What about where you can play? Can you play that one live at Gulfstream Santa and online?
Only at Santa Anita and online on ExpressBet on that one. Okay. Gulfstream is
easy enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, easy enough to play from your ExpressBet account, even if you happen to want to go to Gulfstream that day. Though sometimes it's fun having like a little tournament room there, which you'll have this weekend, you know, potentially at Santa Anita, playing back to Gulfstream, but obviously not the case for the Santa Anita Derby Challenge based on Tyler's say. So what else is coming up? I mean, it sounds like both of these are going to be feeding towards the Derby. Those sound like the major initiatives right now. Folks can obviously learn more looking at that tournament schedule, but any more news in the tournament world from you and the team out that way, Tyler?
Yeah, actually, we're doing something different this year. I forgot to mention this to you earlier, but on April 21st, we're actually doing an Illinois Derby Challenge. So it's something new that's coming around. We don't have all the details yet, but just stand by and check out our tournament page, expressbet.com/tournaments. and you'll see more details develop about that. But it's something that we're doing with alongside, I believe, Hawthorne. So we're trying to just, you know, we're trying to really expand our reach in the tournament realm.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because Hawthorne have a rich history. Chicago and tournament players go together like pepperoni and pizza. I mean, there's so many good ones out there, and I'm sure a lot of people who are used to playing with you anyway. So as they continue to ramp up their racing plan, I think that's a day people should circle on their calendar for the near future. That April 21st date as well makes sense to be paying good attention to. Well, I think we've given the people, Tyler, what they need to know. Take a look at your calendar, get involved in some of these contests, chance to win valuable prizes. Folks who have questions, Tyler, what's the best way to reach out to you?
You can reach out to me via email, or you can reach out to me on Twitter. Wagering Tyler is my Twitter handle and my email. I think you could post it along with this video, but tyler.frosto@burst.com.
Easy enough to remember, but I will try to remember to slug that in the show notes as well. And the place to go, I assume the place to go to sign up, that URL we've said several times already, expressbet.com/tournaments.
Yes, correct.
Great stuff, Tyler. We'll have you back on soon.
Thank you for having me again. I appreciate it.
Last but not least, we bring in a returning guest. He's had accolades as a horse player, as a horse owner, but the hat he is wearing today is that of the chairman of the board of the Thoroughbred Owners of California. He is Gary Fenton. Gary, how are things?
Everything is great, Peter. It's good to be here. It's a spring break for us here in Southern California, so I'm down in a place you love, Del Mar, with my two boys, and they're enjoying a morning at the park.
Very cool. I had jinxed the weather before when I was talking about it in the opening segment of the show. The sun was then shining, or at least trying to poke through the clouds here in South London. Now it's just drizzly as usual, but I'm envious of you out there in California. But thank you for working with me and letting these time zones work. I've been meaning to have you on for a while to talk about these issues taking place in California racing, specifically between Northern California and Southern California, because I feel like, especially in social media, which obviously you can't really rely on to get your news if you want to get accurate information, but it feels like it's just been a little bit of confusing information disseminated lately. I wanted to get the latest from you with what's going on, the state of California racing, specifically Northern California versus Southern California, and just sort of inform the audience what the latest is with this, very political situation.
Well, yeah, Peter, last week's CHRE meeting was really one for the books. There was a big agenda item in terms of whether they were going to allocate dates in the north, dates that were once occupied by Golden Gate Fields, which is closing its doors in the middle of June. So these dates would be towards the end of the year, if not the end of the year, November and December primarily. And then what was not up for the agenda, but certainly on everybody's minds, is the open dates that are directly after that in January, February, March, April, May, and June, which haven't been discussed yet. So it was on the agenda. There was a lot of debate as to whether those dates should be assigned to the northern entity that was applying for it, or whether, as a lot of people have suggested, not just recently, but over the last decade, of whether we should consolidate racing in California and make one circuit, which would primarily run in the south, but for the traditional fair dates that would run June, July, and August. So that was what was being decided. It was very contentious in terms of what California wanted to do. And ultimately, the CHRB is tasked with assigning those dates. And they decided to award the entity, which is really CARF, that runs the fairs, to run at those dates in November and December of this year.
Now, there was some saber rattling going on here at some part of the process, which was some of the stuff getting reported on, especially on social media, about Strana Group, who obviously are sponsors of our network. We'll lay the cards on the table as far as that goes. But with some talk about them being hesitant to be able to invest in the future of California racing if these dates were awarded. What was that about, and what's the resolution of that? What has First / Strana Group made any statements since those dates were in fact awarded?
And one of the things that the letter that came out that First Racing had sent to the CHRB, I think, really startled California in every which way. Horsemen, the CHRB board members, I think even the legislature up in California, some took it, and the CHRB board mentioned this during the meeting, as a bullying tactic to not award the dates in the north and to bring everything down south. I would say to that, I think people are misremembering statements that they had made ever since Golden Gate closed. I believe Aiden Butler at the August CHRB meeting said if things weren't consolidated in the south, they would have a real hard time staying in California. I believe he reiterated that through the end of 23 and at the CHRB meeting in January of 24. So this sort of uproar over this sudden shift and almost bullying tactic, I thought was unfair to the Strana Group, because they had mentioned it over the past 8 months. I've known Belinda Stronach now for a number of years, and she has said to me, her two tracks that she would like to keep going, Santa Anita and Gulfstream, are incredibly important to her. And she's made it very transparent to me that if it works and is viable, and it should be if it's viable to her, it should be viable to the horsemen, she would continue. And she's kept that promise over the last 5 years. So she's been very direct and transparent in terms of the viability of what would it take for her to maintain a first position in California. And nothing ever detracted from that. So the letter certainly ruffled a lot of feathers, and people, I think, misremembered that she had really had made these statements over the years, and specifically over the last 8 months. They have not made a statement since then. We've had a little bit of dialogue with them, and I don't know that necessarily anything has changed. They believe that the financials and the economics in California do not work having two circuits. And I believe, just like they said in the letter, and just like they've said over the last year, I think they're seriously considering their options.
Ugh, it's scary. But let's drill down a little bit on this, and I'm going to ask you to speculate here, because obviously these aren't decisions that you are making. But, you know, given your role with the horsemen, I know you're going to have a good hypothesis for me. It's, from what I understand and the research that I've done, it's not so much that Southern California objects to Northern California having dates as much as the specifics of the current financial relationship between North and South. Am I maybe onto something with that?
Yeah, and I think that's gotten lost in translation. And again, people hear what they want to hear, but the TOC has been very transparent in terms of their position, which every time we seem to make a statement, we get arrows thrown at us from the North. But the statement has really been that if the North can come up, if a racing association, and that seems to be CARF at this point, can come up with a viable plan economically, the TOC and horsemen in California would support it. And that plan would essentially be similar to what Golden Gate has presented over the last couple of years, a $200,000 a day per structure, adequate stabling and training facilities. We just haven't seen that proposal as of yet, which was why when they asked us at the meeting whether we supported the plan or not, we made it very clear that we support Northern Racing. We can go through the economics a little bit where I can back that up, assuming it's a viable plan. If it's not a viable plan, supporting a North plan really would sink both the North and the South. And again, I think people hear what they want to hear, and I don't know that they necessarily understand the economics the way some people do in the industry. But that's really where the TOC's position is. And I thought it was very, very clear at the meeting who was supporting which. There was about an hour-long session after the agenda item where the public could speak, and they went for about an hour, and a lot of North smaller owners, smaller breeders, and a lot of grooms and hot walkers and jockeys spoke. But what was very clear was that there wasn't one big Northern owner who stood up and said, you know, we like this plan and they're willing to support it. So as I said, during the meeting to the CHRB board, they can allocate the dates all they want, but if horsemen don't support it, then it's going to fail. And at this point, we haven't seen a plan where we believe North or South horsemen would support it. Unfortunately, I'd like to see the North continue. In California, for example, if we do 125 million in purse generation, we can't do 125 million if there is no North racing. So whatever people say, the South just wants to eliminate the North. That's not true at all. What we'd like is a viable plan in the North, which would continue the 125 million. We're looking at 110 million, 105 million. We can't generate the same number of purses if we don't have the same number of races. So it's incredibly important that we do have a viable North plan. The issue really has become, if there isn't a viable North plan, how much money is sunk into, let's call it five horse fields in the North where America wouldn't really be interested in gambling on it.
I think we need a little bit of a history lesson in terms of the way revenue has been shared historically between Northern California and Southern California, because I think that underpins some of the disconnect that we're sort of talking around a little bit here.
Yeah, so there's two main economic funding that goes on in both circuits, and one is what I think your listeners know already is what's bet in the North stays in the North, what's bet in the South stays in the South. So there's a division in the middle of California that divides up the funding. And what isn't really clear to a lot of people is that besides that, there are two things that really we call it subsidies that send purses from the South to the North. And I know a lot of South horsemen and trainers have barked about it over the years, and we've done our best to try to whittle away at those subsidies. But there was this full ecosystem, and I don't want to call it cherry picking. Sometimes you get the short end of the stick, and sometimes it's made up for. So if for instance, in the past, if there were subsidies being sent up North, the North would say, hey, well, wait a minute. We have a good product that you're betting on that you get to keep on, and it's a full circle of life here. With Golden Gate going away, there really isn't the same fair trade that's going on. And so a lot of the South horsemen have raised the issue of, for instance, CHRB support. It costs about $20 million a year to fund our regulatory body. And that includes all the testing that is done after races. That includes all the salaries for all the stewards. And that's paid out of purses and commissions. So $10 million a year is taken out of purses and paid to have our regulatory body. Due to what some people say antiquated statutes, under a new North system, virtually all of that $20 million would be paid for the South. And I think you can understand why some South horsemen who already, you see purses where they are, can't, there's really no extra funding to go send up North, and for them to make the argument that why are we paying for testing and why are we paying for their stewards is a legitimate argument that we have been making with the CHRB over the last couple of years, and definitely more recently with Golden Gate going away. These statutes were created many, many years ago. Well, like I said, when there was a healthy, really, really healthy North with Golden Gate and Bay Meadows and a lot more bigger horse population, where I like to call fair trade going between the two zones. So that's one instance of it. The other one is what they call source market fees. And Santa Anita and Del Mar can sell their signal around the country for market fees. They can charge what they want, and the rest of the country and the rest of the world can pay what they want. But in California, we have a statute that's been on the books for many, many, many years, decades, where the North has to send their signal down South for free, and the South has to send their signal down up North for free. So again, 20 years ago, there was a lot of races that and big races that were coming down from the North, and the trade was relatively fair. Now with Golden Gate going away, and a CARF product coming down when they decide to run, there's an argument to be made that the North is sending their signal up for free is costing the purse account millions and millions of dollars. And I'll give really one example. With the CARF schedule that they put out, there's a lot of gaps and a lot of dark weeks. So Lo Sal could make the argument that not only is it unfair that we have to send it up for free, but the way the schedule is right now, there's not even a signal coming back for them. So that's, we're talking about between the CHRB expenses and these source market fees that are sent up for free. We're talking about millions and millions of dollars in purses that are sent from the South to the North, which has been really the predominant argument from the South. It's not that they don't want North to continue. They just don't have the funding to support it anymore.
am I correct that there's an analogy to baseball and revenue sharing to be made here?
Well, certainly. But the revenue sharing is done because all 30 teams need to be of a certain
quality.
Quality, right? So yes and no. So while the revenue sharing happens in all the sports, there are minimums that are set for the bottom level team so that they're literally not just taking a subsidy from the top. Again, one of the things that was discussed at the CHR meeting and hasn't been settled yet is, are there going to be any minimums? So the CARF had sent out a proposal that projected 200,000 a day in purses. But when the TOC sent out their projections, 200,000 a day assumes that they're going to handle the exact same pretty much as what Golden Gate did. And it's, I don't want to use the word impossible, but I'll give you an example. When Collywood Park closed and the dates transferred over to Los Al, you had the same horses, the same horsemen, the same trainers moving just from Hollywood Park to Los Al, and that brand difference reduced handle by, I think it was 40% in the first year. So you have that history looking at where you think purse generation could be. And then you have really this new element that's a big factor. And your listeners probably get this more than anybody. You're going from a tapita and a turf colony to all dirt. So in terms of what the quality of horses are that go down there and whether their form stays the same, we're projecting that America is going to probably have a wait and see approach on how they gamble on Pleasanton, which is why our purse projections are much, much lower. And again, another reason why the TOC took the vision that they did. We've heard from our horsemen in the north, and all of them want to continue horse racing, but they've also all said to us at $150,000 a day because of expenses, we can't afford to race up there. So again, nobody wants Northern California racing to go away. But it's really our job as a board to represent our horsemen and to be transparent with the horsemen that at $150,000 a day, we don't want grooms setting up and changing jobs and changing locations and trainers really selling houses and moving down to Pleasanton and setting up this colony when we know from the outset that it could be destined to fail within a few months.
Couple of big questions to follow up on everything we've been talking about. Because the revenue sharing that you're describing, you know, and you make a good case why it doesn't, you know, work as well as it would in baseball, that idea of the, you know, products within a teams within a league have to be a certain quality for the revenue sharing to make sense. It doesn't make sense for a major league team to, sorry, Northern California, I love you, but to share with, you know, A ball or, you know, double A ball, whatever analogy you want to make. But because these revenue sharing mechanisms are statutory, you're talking about having to change state law then to get that, to get this changed. Is that accurate?
Yeah. You're really getting in the weeds here, but the CHRB expenses are assigned from the CHRB. So the CHRB has the control of how it is funded. So that doesn't need a statutory change, but okay. The source market fees is statutory. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Stronach Group and their lobbyists head up to Sacramento to make the case that if they want Santa Anita to stick around, one of the boxes that needs to be checked is to revise these decade-old statutes and allow them to sell their signal at market prices and accept the same back from Pleasanton to be able to sell their signal back at market prices. Whether the legislature sees the need to make this change or not is to be determined. I do know that they were rattled, as everybody else was, at the prospect of Santa Anita going away. And if we look really into the economics of what would happen to California as a whole, I'm not sure that they talk about falling into the ocean and all the things that could happen for us to fall into the ocean as an industry. That certainly would get us to the edge, if not over it. And I'll give you one example. The North, we talk about what's bet in the North stays in the North. The North bets very little on their own product. They bet on out-of-state product and they bet on the South. So if Santa Anita were to go away, that's 20% or 25% of what the North bets on. And they're really, if you look back at history, it's not that they would take that same money and bet it on their own product or bet it out of state. Generally, when races go away, handle goes away. So if we're already looking at a purse schedule that doesn't work, I mean, drop that by 10 or 20%, and you're running for $120,000 a day.
At the risk of being Pollyannish here, just looking at it objectively from the outside, it feels like maybe there could be a scenario where the subsidy issues get addressed. The North finds some way to continue racing without them, just having to, I mean, I guess radically lower purses would be one net effect of it, but maybe could still be some kind of circuit, just not as, and I don't mean these terms to be insulting, so I apologize to, you know, people in Northern California, but to basically be able to survive on their own and not be propped up so much by the South. I'd love to see that be able to happen. When you talk about the horsemen out there wanting to see a plan that works, is that kind of what you're talking about? Is that reading between the lines? What you're saying is, let's see a situation where you can survive without this subsidy, and then maybe we can work together to make something happen. Is that a realistic thing?
Well, so that then goes to, if you get to that place, the North has continued to say, just give us a chance and let us see if we can survive. So if you take away the subsidies, and they can survive at 120,000 or 130,000 a day, there's an argument to be made that that's their money, and they should be able to run a, let's call it a Finger Lakes type circuit up there. Mm-hmm. I think there'll be a lot of support for that. But there will be others that say, we really don't have the funding mechanism to support two circuits, and you're still taking millions and millions of dollars and putting it into a circuit that you could redirect back down to the South and really create a premium brand product that competes a lot better with the Keenelands of the world and the Nairas of the world and the Oaklands of the world. And in doing so, again, looking at what one of the plans look like, CARF during the summer is incredibly popular. If you go to the fairs, they're supported by people. They love their fair racing up North. If they were to allow that redirect to happen. So again, 120,000 a day, if they can survive and they want to do it, that's great. But the other proposal I thought was pretty attractive, which was let the South sort of be the grinder the 9 months of the year and to have races for those 1,100 horses. And then during the summer, because you've created this one circuit, you could actually prop up the CARF purses by 10 or 20% and have the funding to send the horses back up in their vans to support a really, really healthy circuit up North during the summer. So I know a lot of people have said, why isn't that the best plan? You have the best of all worlds. You have a tremendous CARF during the summer. And then the rest of the year, you have a premium product that the rest of the country would love to gamble on. And I think there's some merit to it. But that would take away from the let the North try to keep year-round racing going, which, again, I think there'll be enough support for as long as the subsidies go away.
Interesting. Yeah, that idea of a year-round circuit, the California as one circuit, I mean, that's been floated for years by people like Craig Burnick, and it's something that I've always thought, you know, as an outsider might make a degree of sense. But to play devil's advocate about the way it's being proposed in this potential iteration, it's just not that easy, it seems, for the, you know, it's not like you're going to have a ton of people from the North, from what I understand, able to like relocate to make the South their home base throughout the year. I mean, is that the potential impediment that the Northern California, a lot of ownership interest, et cetera, just goes away because of just the physical difficulty of getting trainers and help to move from Northern California to Southern California? I mean, I'd love to be wrong, but I worry about.
I think that's an absolutely fair statement. People have been based in the North for a long time. This is their homes. They have kids. The kids are in school, and relocating in any industry is obviously hard and difficult on those that have to. But taking that aside, I would say the flip side is, the rest of America relocates. I don't think there's one circuit in America that doesn't have to move at some point during the year.
Right.
So people have called, you know, they've said North has been pretty lucky that they never have to really relocate. Even in Southern mm-hmm. California, everybody relocates to 100, 120 miles down south, down to Del Mar. And I know a lot of people aren't going to cry for horsemen that have to spend their summers in Del Mar, but it is a relocation. My kids, all they know is spending the summers down here away from their friends and making new friends down in Del Mar. So everybody's had to do it. So yes, it isn't easy. It's tricky. And nobody ever is choosing this path, right? Economically, we're sort of being forced into this path. And I know people recognize that. And the last thing anybody ever wants to do is have to say to somebody they have to relocate their family.
And another thing I do want to point out again, first responders. So, you know, I feel like I'm playing this down the middle, but I do want to be honest about, you know, where my loyalties are. But I do also want to point out to some of the people, you know, the uninformed people largely who are just pillorying, you know, First/Stronach about this stuff, is that California Racing's in a lot of difficult things going on in terms of having no, you know, gaming subsidies that others have, in terms of being on an island. Like there's more challenges that get faced by Southern California than you would, if you were just a casual fan, than you would think from, you know, how prestigious the brand is. So the idea that there has to be a little bit of a Street Fighter mentality in protecting the validity of one of their core products in Santa Anita. Look, I have sympathy for the people in the North, but I have sympathy for the people who own the track too.
Well, so, and that's a very interesting point, right? It always has to work for the horsemen and the racetrack. And I know the Stronach Group has had a interesting relationship with horsemen in California through the years. Ray Pollock actually pointed out to me something that I thought that was pretty unique. He asked me when the last time a racetrack was sold to another party where the racetrack didn't have an ancillary revenue attached to it. And in the last 20 years, we couldn't come up with one. So as much as people have been saying, you know, we need a new racetrack owner, or some people have been saying that, the question is who would that owner be? If Belinda is saying now that, you know, maybe she has to rethink her options, I would imagine that if anybody wanted to make an offer to buy the racetrack from her and continue as a racetrack, at least at this point, you know, thanks to the letter, she would be open to it. Over the last few years, while we've seen people, you know, throw arrows at them and say we'd like a new owner, nobody's really stepping up to the table with it. And so then you would then go for those that support Santa Anita and support what Belinda's trying to do. They actually appreciate everything that she's been doing, because she is the only one willing to own a racetrack without an ancillary revenue or subsidy attached to it. And so I can see both sides to it. It's certainly been, like I said, an interesting relationship through the years. I can tell you that since Belinda took over, the relationship, at least where we sit at the TOC, has been a lot better. Like I said to you at the very beginning, there isn't anything she said that she's, you know, backtracked on. Right. And so we like to think that we've been partners through this, thick and thin. It started off a little rocky in 2019. But we battled through it together, and California is a pretty resilient bunch. And I'm hopeful that we still have premium racing out here and we can find a way to get through this.
Gary, that's a great place to leave it. Really appreciate you sharing time and coming on today. We'll have you back soon. Maybe we'll make you pick some horses the next time.
That sounds fun. We'll have a little bit more fun next time. That sounds awesome.
That's going to do it for this edition of the show. I'd like to thank today's guests, JK and Gary and Tyler. We'll thank our founding partners, 10 Strike Racing, and also Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga. Technically not our founding partners, but Kim Weir is, and that's where she is now. We're definitely supporting the work that they do. To learn more about their mission, in themoneypodcast.com/horses. A quick programming reminder, tune in on Saturday. Final time yet to be determined, but I think we're going to be doing this live stream from 5 to 7. We're bringing back the final table format, live bankroll, mythical money. We're competing for shares in an Adelphi racehorse. It's going to be an absolute ton of fun. Look for on our social media more information about that. The Echo Town 8, as we're calling it, though the horse now has a name. He's going to be Skytown. Going to be a lot of fun for sure. Most of all, though, I want to thank all of you, the listeners, for making these shows so much fun to do. This show has been a production of In the Money Media. I'm Peter Thomas Fornatale. May you win all your photos.